Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete.
Successful-ish.
Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see.
I'm successful-ish.
Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve.
Successful-ish.
Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Successful-ish. I'm Sarah Michelle, and I am so excited to talk about one of my favorite topics today, entrepreneurship. As an accidental entrepreneur, I'm always so appreciative of entrepreneurial support. I've been in various cultures with the digital entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, agencies, private companies, the local community staples, and entrepreneurship can look so many different ways. And what I love is that it really highlights the uniqueness of both the business and the owner behind the business. So you may know I spent the last 7 years or so in New England, which is what I would call Hallmark entrepreneurial, just straight out of a Hallmark holiday film. And recently moved to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which I will be honest, I had never heard of prior to passing through the city. And I think that's a shame because it's such a cool place. And when I think of booming business or the American dream or community opportunity, all those things, my brain just immediately defaults to the bigger cities, New York, Los Angeles. But I think there is just a lot of really beautiful opportunity all over the US. And I think actually sometimes there's more opportunity in places that we might not even think to look. And I don't know if I've ever been in a community that does it better than Cedar Rapids. In addition to having a community full of local businesses, there is a built-in support system to encourage more people to become a part of this thriving ecosystem. And having been a struggling solopreneur for a very long time, I immediately fell in love with the support and celebration that comes with being in this community. So after about a month of moving to Iowa, of being here, I volunteered at an event called EntreFest, which was a conference full of entrepreneurial speakers, workshops, pitch contests, all the good things. And that is where I met our guest today, Jill Wilkins, who seamlessly coordinated so many of the details that made both that event and the community in general just a booming success. So a little bit about our guest. Jill joined the Cedar Rapids Downtown District in 2007 to lead the newly established Downtown Farmers Market. In her 10 years as the events planner for the Downtown District and then the Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance, she grew the market from 50 to over 200 vendors, created Market After Dark, and ran numerous other large-scale community events and conferences. In 2016, she joined the New Bohemian Innovation Collaboration, or NuBoCo, as the events director to produce EntreFest, an entrepreneurship and innovation conference. She became the COO of the organization in 2021 and interim executive director in May of 2023. Jill enjoys the opportunity to lead this impactful statewide nonprofit and work with the big innovative thinkers throughout the state, and is grateful to be a part of an organization that consists of so many dynamic, action-oriented, passionate people. She also teaches musical theater at Dance Arts Iowa in Mount Vernon and is the choreographer for the Mount Vernon High School musical production. She currently serves on the board of the Revival Theater Company and previously served on boards for the History Center and Nubo Market. She lives in Lisbon, Iowa with her husband, Thad, son, Hagen, and furry baby, Archie. So Jill, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for all that you have done so far. You know, I'm so happy that I got to meet you a few months ago.
Yeah, me as well. I love that in addition to community and entrepreneurship, you have a passion for community and theater. And I know for those of you listening, you can't see the background right now, but there is just a wall of theater posters behind Jill, and it's making me want to go sing a song and watch a musical.
I mean, there's still opportunity after this, right?
Yes, absolutely. So before we jump into the conversation, what is something that you failed at this week?
That's always an interesting question because it's like, oh, I could probably have like a long list, but the thing that jumped out at me is one of the things that should just be so simple. I have been trying to start to read a book for work on an entrepreneurial operating system because it's something that I think we might be interested in trying. And so it's very much an important task for my day-to-day work, and it's something that would be even enjoyable, yet gosh darn it, can I actually reserve the time to do it and follow through? No. I have tried all week to just open the book, and every single time it's like, oh, I should probably do, you know, these other five things because I can get those done real quick and whatnot. And so I've been really annoyed because it's sitting right there and it just keeps staring at me.
And I relate to that. I have a book on ClickFunnels that's been collecting dust on my bookcase for longer than I care to admit.
It's like, it is a thing that actually I kind of want to do, right? And, you know, long term, this is actually very important for the organization. It was really good, but, you know, it's really hard to find the time and get that to the top of the priority list when there's just all of those little other day-to-day things. And so and I'm definitely somebody who really likes to check things off the list. And so that is definitely something I have failed at for more than just this week, but I'm really trying hard to have that not continue to be my answer if you were to ask me next week.
Yeah, I think that's part of for me is I love to check off the to-do list, and I'm the nerd who will write down something I've already done just so I can highlight it. And at least feel successful. Mm-hmm. And with something like reading a book about ClickFunnels or something new, mm-hmm. it's great. I want to learn those things, but I know that it's going to be a while before that is a highlighted item on my list. And I feel like the older I get, it's almost like the harder it is for my brain to consume more information. Mm-hmm. And yes. I don't know if it's a post-COVID thing of just the world has changed so much that I'm like, you know what? No, too much. The world is changing too much. I have I've hit my quota. I can't have any more change. Yes. So I think I can definitely relate with that challenge. So tell us a little bit about your story and about what Nubo Co. is. Like, how did you get to this place in life?
Sure. You know, it's always an interesting path and journey. And it's kind of funny because I'm very much a planner and, you know, like to check the things off the list, like we just said. However, my path has definitely not been by any plan or that I put in place. And so I always have found that interesting because it kind of, I went the opposite of what is my natural, probably, desire in everyday life to have the plan. I'm going to make the thing work and this is what I'm going to do. And as far as my story has very much been, I've been doing this thing and this path became available or a door opened and I happened to step through. And so I've always found that, I think, just interesting because it's probably not what I would naturally do. But I started off, you know, going to college, was interested in communications and public relations, and what you had mentioned earlier, just have always had, you know, passion for the arts. Both my parents are artists. They gave me no artistic ability whatsoever when it comes to the visual arts, but gave me certainly a love for it. And as you mentioned, all of my posters, performing arts is kind of where I found my home growing up and throughout college and whatnot, and continues to be a big part today. So I kind of had that vision, and that's kind of where I started in my career with the orchestra in Cedar Rapids. And kind of with that, you know, just happening to, you know, follow opportunity. I was not the person that would usually go out after, you know, a work day to the bar with people. But for one day, I just happened to do so. And there was a group of people there, and they were talking about the downtown district and how they were needing to create this event position. And at the orchestra, I just happened to start to do some events. I had no event background, no schooling, but I had started to do a little bit as part of that job. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll apply. Applied for the downtown district job and became the event planner there. And so again, it was very much just kind of like on this whim. But that was really what gave me the opportunity to become involved in that community development piece and the event planning, which has very much been kind of the thing that started, I would say, a lot of the trajectory of where I am today. Because I had a lot of opportunity to work with city officials, county officials, business owners throughout the entire Cedar Rapids community to really understand like what that community is, what it wanted to be, and how important those unique businesses were to like the thread of the community. You mentioned the farmers market, you know, that was a great experience because, you know, when we talk about the entrepreneurship piece, those 200 vendors were all people who decided to make something or grow something or take that initiative. And I was able to be able to pull them together and make it into like a really cool event community experience. So did that between the Downtown District and Economic Alliance for 10 years, and then had this opportunity at Nubo Co. Become available to host EntreFest and direct EntreFest, which was a conference that had been around in Iowa for a while, but had been owned by the Regents of the three state colleges. And so it was going under a transition. It was becoming part of the Nubo Co. nonprofit organization. And again, just happened to have a couple people reach out and say, you know, might this be something of interest? And again, just was like, well, maybe, you know, and then went on and had that conversation, and then have been now with this organization in a variety of roles since 2016. So, you know, I think it's been an interesting path, but I think kind of what you alluded to earlier with the community is that it's a really neat connected community, that all of my positions have come from some of those connections and those experiences working with others. And like, that has been definitely something that I have not appreciated or realized that that was definitely impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my favorite parts of Cedar Rapids is that right next to the downtown is the district, which are these two little sections of just really fun places, restaurants, shops. Each of them has such a strong, unique personality, and yet somehow all kind of go together. And so can you share a little bit about what the Nubo Market is, where that came from, what does that look like, and how did that come about?
Sure. So yes, the Nubo District as a whole is really a great example of the resiliency of the community after the flood of 2008. So at that time, I was working at the Downtown District, and we had a 100-year flood that impacted miles and miles of the community. We won't go into long details, but was very devastating for the Cedar Rapids community. And that could definitely be something that could just crush a community, or could be something that really inspires people to act and develop. And that's really where the Nubo neighborhood came from, was just that building after such devastation. And so a few of the things that came out of that were the Nubo City Market. That space certainly was very much impacted by the flood. There was a woman named Sarah in the community who had this vision. She had seen these markets elsewhere, and she was going to make that happen. And she pulled together stakeholders, got community members together to help with the fundraising. I happened to be on the board of the organization right when it opened. And so it was so neat to be able to see that market come into play and still be such like a key face of the neighborhood and of the city as a whole, and a great opportunity for entrepreneurs, you know, to have that start. Also shortly after the flood, and in a similar situation, is where the Geonetric building came into play, and where the Nubo Co. organization was founded. And so our founder, Eric Engelman, at the time of the flood was running a software development company that builds websites called Geonetric. And again, post-flood, they were actually in need of getting a new building. And many people had been looking to the outskirts of the community at that time. But because of the flood, people were starting to look more into the core. What could we do to help rebuild? And so he and his co-founder looked to the Nubo neighborhood to build their Geonetric building, and to bring the, instead of taking the company to the outskirts, to build it into the core of the community. And so while he was doing that, he's like, I could add an extra floor for not that much money. Maybe I could do something cool with that. And so that's kind of really where it stemmed from, creating the New Bohemian Innovation Collaborative, which is where he was just seeing this ability to really leverage this momentum to really build an entrepreneurial community within Cedar Rapids. And so I think that district between Nubo Co., the market, and all of the other things just within this neighborhood has really been a cool just growth opportunity. It's fun. It has a great vibrant atmosphere, and it's unique to our community, and goes back to the foundation of just those who built the community, you know, very early on, as far as, you know, the Czech the Czech immigrants that came over. So it's just a very cool story. I've been excited to be a part of Nubo Co. and to be able to help with the entrepreneurial, you know, building of that community. That organization itself, and I could keep going and going, so stop me, but it, you know, that has grown a lot too. It started as an accelerator, the very first accelerator in the state of Iowa, and then saw gaps. And so we've added K-12 education, and we've added innovation and the EntreFest and more entrepreneurial support. So it's just that continual vision and just awareness to be like, okay, what are those things that we can do to continue to boost our community to help businesses thrive?
Absolutely. And my understanding is that a lot of the entrepreneurs, especially that go through Nubo Market, they apply and then they get additional support through Nubo Co. Is that correct?
Some of that is. So there's a few different programs. Yep. So those that are part of the market, they have the market itself has its own program for some of them called the Hatchery. And so they've been able to really grow support of just the specific vendors within the market to make sure, again, just building educational opportunities, mentorship opportunities and whatnot. Many of, not many, but some of those vendors or merchants, I think is the correct term, have been part of our Kiva Iowa program, which is something that our organization hosts, similar program as far as like how we host EntreFest and some other things, but it is a micro lending program and it's very much focused towards entrepreneurs who might not be able to get capital through maybe more traditional routes. So bank loans, for example. And so it's really a great opportunity to focus on the underserved entrepreneur, underrepresented entrepreneur, to be able to give resources to be able to get those next steps to move forward in growing those businesses. So that is a newer program of ours. We're just finishing up the second year of it, but that has been very impactful. It's been something that filled a gap. And it is also something that we have as an organization been able to really provide the state of Iowa as a whole. So certainly there's very much a lot of collaboration within Cedar Rapids, but that is actually a state of Iowa program. So if you have, you know, listeners in different areas, that is something that would be open to them. And also many other states or cities actually also have this program.
Awesome. Yeah, I think one of the things that I definitely notice is just that cheerleader support. And I know the first time that I passed through Cedar Rapids, like I mentioned, I had never heard of the city before. I just needed a hotel and there was Cedar Rapids, this little mysterious place in Iowa. And I met a local bookstore owner who had lived kind of all over the country. And he was telling me about what it was like for him moving from Manhattan and Boston and San Francisco, and then kind of opening this bookshop in the middle of Cedar Rapids. And he was sharing a lot about going through COVID and how the community really rallied to, you know, encourage people to eat at different or order out from different restaurants every night. And he started doing book deliveries, like drive-by books. And I love that there's so much just cheerleading support. And I know tonight there's a big fundraising dinner where all of these different restaurateurs get to show off their skills and everyone in the community gets to come out and celebrate them and cheer them on. And I think one of the most challenging things with entrepreneurship and community is building a community. And so when you were coming on and there were, you know, maybe a small handful of vendors or merchants, say, what was that process like of, I feel like so often people only want to go to places where there's already crowds. Mm-hmm. So how did you create that crowd and that demand, and what impact did that have on the community as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a great point, because, you know, you want it to just instantly be that thing, right, that everybody's going to come to and everybody will appreciate. And I think, you know, if I go back over time, you know, I really think about even just like the early days of the downtown farmers market that started a year before I started at the organization, and there were 50 vendors on the street, and then that grew to 200. But that 50 vendors, it was somebody first seeing an idea and going for and taking it and getting that buy-in from the community around it. Because at first there was the thought that, wait, we're bringing in more people to sell things by stores, storefronts that are already there. Isn't that a competition? Isn't that maybe taking away from our brick and mortar businesses and actually not what we want to have happen? But the exact opposite is actually what did happen, because it brought a unique experience, something different, and a reason for maybe somebody to come down more often than they would have, or maybe got somebody to try to come down to the area that hadn't for a long time. And they maybe had an old notion of what the area was like and what there was to maybe do. And so that little thing started with such a little bit. And at first, again, the businesses weren't so sure, but then they very quickly realized how much this collaboration positively impacts everybody. And then the support that everybody was able to give to each other was really, really cool to see, because it, again, it's that not one entity or one business probably is, would ever have made that successful together. It was the whole neighborhood, the whole downtown working together, actively promoting it, allowing a vendor to pull their car into this parking space of this other business because it would help, you know, the storefront that work together a little bit more. Some partnerships that happened between vendors and businesses because they saw that way of, oh, hey, you know what, our products kind of complement each other. Maybe I will sell this thing and then I'm going to come out and I'm going to add my product in. We're going to do something together to make this really cool package. It just really provided opportunity for people to think outside the box a little bit more. And I think once you get that energy going, it really fuels others to think about it. And then that's where you get that excitement, that community to build, to buy in, and you see the economic impact. You know, that you start to see hard numbers for those who need that, as far as how that community togetherness and that creative atmosphere can lead to hard, tangible numbers of growth and success for a community as a whole. And I think, you know, knowing that that isn't going to necessarily always just happen, right? It was over time going from 50 to 100 to 150 to, you know, and then 5 years down the road, having this much bigger impact. And it took a lot of people, you know, a lot of volunteers. You know, you had mentioned how you had volunteered at Entrefest earlier. There was a large group of people involved in the downtown market, for example, Entrefest, for example, the Nubo market, those early days of getting that started. And still today, I think that's been a really neat piece of our community as well, is that there are people willing to give their time and talent and knowledge because they see the value in what they're doing. And I think also we do a good job of showing appreciation in most scenarios. And I think that's important too. And it keeps people coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that culture piece is so important. I think that you can have all of the tactile pieces of having a successful business, but if you don't have a healthy culture, it makes such a difference. If you walk into, you know, a district where everyone's kind of in it for themselves. And I think that's one of the biggest mindset things for entrepreneurs, is to push past that scarcity mindset and to really get to that place where you understand you don't want to be an entrepreneur on an island. It's lonely. It's hard. You want community. Collaboration is so much better. And especially when you think about, you know, brick and mortar businesses, we might have this inherent thought in our head that tells us, well, we don't want competition. But as a customer consumer, I'm more inclined to go somewhere if I have four different coffee shops to choose from. I love that I can browse multiple bookstores. I can go to different restaurants every day of the week. And I think that that is something that brings a lot of life to the community too. And I've noticed, especially Friday, Saturday nights, one of the things that I noticed was that the whole city changes, the whole district changes. If you walk through on a Monday afternoon when it's kind of sleepy, totally different than walking through on a Friday night where everybody is there. And what was amazing to me is that it felt like everyone in Cedar Rapids was in this little stretch of town, but every business had something going on. So every restaurant was packed. There's live music shows. Everyone's kind of at their own scene. a lot of people would wander. I think I went to like 7 different live music shows in a night. And I think that aspect of having multiple options actually really fuels the economy. So can you share a little bit about what is that like? I don't know if you're involved with city planning or anything like that, but how does that dynamic impact the economic growth of a city?
Yes, no, that is a really good point. That was something that I definitely, before I started working in the community development piece in particular with like the Economic Alliance, which is the chamber organization here in Cedar Rapids, that I had definitely had the thought that you probably wouldn't want too much, because then you would think that they would be monopolized, you know, they would not be helping each other. But 100%, it is amazing that density and that variety really does fuel. When we were really focusing on rebuilding the downtown, for example, it really was like getting that core area and that density. And the same with Czech Village and the Nouveau District, of having multiple places for people to do exactly what you just said that you are going to do, because the intent is that somebody's probably going to come down for one particular thing, but then you want them to run into 5 other particular things that they maybe will utilize that evening, or they will know to come back to. If they come down and they've gone to the one thing, then they go and they automatically leave again if you don't have that density. And so you've had somebody come for maybe an hour as opposed to 2 or 3 because they were caught wandering around. And there were many, many of the different downtown conferences and different economic development opportunities went to the, you know, time and again, showing that model, really how important that is, and having both the nightlife component with the lunch component, with the dinners, with the arts, you know, and the arts is a big piece of that too. And obviously that's something that's near and dear, so I certainly focus on it. But the fact that we have variety of theater organizations, you know, you can most definitely be coming across some sort of live theater or live music in Cedar Rapids on the weekend at any point in time. But also the art museum and the history center, you have those cultural amenities that really do add, because again, you have somebody who maybe goes to a cultural amenity and then you have the restaurant nearby, and it just, they constantly work together and give us that opportunity to collaborate, to market, you know, what we have here and the unique aspect of it. Because I think that's like the entrepreneurial piece too, right? Yeah. That's what makes, you know, those local restaurants are what give you that local flavor. And so that you know that you are in whatever community you are in and not somewhere else. Yeah. That's been, you know, I think one of the things that I have a lot of fun with is just seeing what's that new thing that's going to pop up that people are going to know us for now.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's interesting too, because culture is one of those things where you've got the individual culture of every business has their own personality, but then also it kind of takes on this collective culture in the community. And so when you're looking at different entrepreneurs, I know you've worked with a lot of different entrepreneurs and businesses that have tried to set themselves up. What are the signals to you that someone kind of has what it takes or doesn't? Because I feel like if you have someone who comes in and they're not really ready, or they don't have a healthy internal culture, that's going to weigh down on the whole community culture. And so how does that work out when you're looking at different entrepreneurs? What are the things that you look for that would signal, yes, this is a person who's going to bring so much life, not just to their own success, but to the community as a whole?
I think the energy and passion and drive are really a couple of those things that really stand out right away and are signs of potential success. Because you've mentioned this, like, it is hard. It is draining and it's hard. And that mental and emotional support is something that doesn't get talked about enough and is really important. And so having somebody that can help navigate that through their own journey, or the journey that they're maybe having with others, with another co-founder, I think is a very key piece of something that we will see early on that will help maybe be a sign of potential success. I also think early on when you're having that conversation with a new founder or somebody who's looking, is their willingness to listen. And listen to that potential customer and listen to that feedback. Because throughout our time with the accelerator program in particular, it very rarely happens where the business started with this idea and then at the end was the same. You know, because you go through that discovery of figuring out what you're trying to fix this or solve this problem with this thing that you've come up with, and learning along the way of what your potential customer is really needing, many times isn't what you thought, right? And so the founders that are very much stuck in that this is the thing and this is how it's going to be run into a lot of struggles along the way, because there has to be so much of that opportunity to evolve the idea, to listen, to take that feedback, to come back, figure it out, ask for more feedback so that you truly are solving the problem that needs to be solved and creating the thing that people want. And I think that can be hard though, because you're like, I have this amazing idea and I'm going to do this thing. And then, and this is how it's going to be because it was so great. And then it's like, oh wait, but not quite.
Oh, and I think that's such an important point, that adaptability is so important to constantly redefining our definition of success. Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that I noticed, especially going through COVID, I saw a lot of small businesses that were like, oh, the world is shut down and that's why I'm shut down and I can't make money because the world is falling apart. And I saw a lot of other businesses that were like, this is a new opportunity. I'm going to change direction. And they were hugely successful. And I know that was something for me as a young entrepreneur, I sort of learned the hard way, was the importance of picking the right circle. Not all entrepreneur circles are the same. Right. And I think that I was in a circle where there was a lot of negativity of, man, it's hard. I don't know how to attract clients. I'm not making enough money. And it was just a lot of negativity. And I felt all of that of like, yeah, it is hard. And maybe I can't do this. And as soon as you switch circles and it's a different mindset of, wow, I get to solve problems every day. I get to build this new business. I get to adapt to all these things. It just creates this whole different energy. And I know Cedar Rapids has gone through quite a few. I know over the last several years, quite a few challenges. So what do you think it is? What are those common qualities across the community in Cedar Rapids that have made the impact where a lot of communities maybe just fell apart and all the businesses shut down? I've seen that, unfortunately, in several places, as opposed to Cedar Rapids, where it really became really vibrant. What do you think that difference was?
You know, I think there's a few things. I think, you know, if you look back on the history of the community as a whole, it was very much founded on entrepreneurs and people who came up with these ideas and built these amazing businesses that you can only find here. You know, think about Collins Aerospace is mentioned a lot when that conversation comes up with, we had Art Collins, you know, creating, you know, the radio in his attic or bedroom, you know, and that eventually evolved to what is Collins Aerospace today. You have just like a natural, just historic foundation of that here. And I think that really is a root that has continued through years and years and years. As you mentioned, you know, we, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but Cedar Rapids just gets hit a lot with some strange, you know, natural disasters in particular. And then COVID, when you have, you know, significant floods multiple times, you have a derecho, which doesn't happen too terribly often. And then you mix that with COVID. There's a lot of challenges, but I think the natural just reaction of the people in our community is that you say, okay, now what? Okay, now what? Let's figure it out. And then we're going to go on. There's definitely the let's figure it out mentality. I think that has just always been there and just continues to be just a natural part of the fabric. And I'm not sure if there is like a real reason why, or if it's just that we have been able to have some really great leaders throughout who have, help just continues to have that mindset thrive. But, you know, I just think about those different experiences that I've been a part of. And I don't know that I ever really remember a time where it was like, oh, shoot. Well, I guess, you know, we can't do that anymore. Or, oh, you know, darn, I guess we're done. It was always, well, okay, so now this happened, now what?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it is changing something, you know, maybe it just doesn't stay the same. You are, you know, you're innovating, you're evolving, right? But it's that, okay, now what, move forward approach as opposed to just stop. And I think that's just has been, and I think probably within, you know, many areas of the state too, that's just how we are. And I think because of that, supporting each other in that, you know, somebody says, okay, now what? And you don't have somebody say, no, it's that yes. And which, if I go back to like the theater, it's the yes, now what?
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's an important mentality to keep in mind. I feel like it's kind of like if you go on a road trip and there's a tree blocking your highway, like rather mm-hmm. than go around, if you're like, oh, well, this doesn't match my original map, so I guess I'm not taking this road trip. And I think when you have a rigid plan, you're set up for failure because life is never going to follow a plan. So I think that's an important point of just having that mindset of, well, I am going to succeed. How right. I succeed is going to have to vary day by day. I know another thing that you are really involved in is sort of screening entrepreneurs or speakers, screening people who can be able to inspire at these conferences, at different events. Mm-hmm. This is something that I think has become really important and prevalent in recent years, just this idea of having a personal brand, personal presence. Okay. So what are some, and not everyone who is a talented, successful entrepreneur is also a talented, successful speaker. And I want to clear it up right now that that is okay. Started the rumor that if you have a successful business, you also have to be this amazing award-winning speaker. But when you're looking for that, what are some things that you screen for?
I would say the thing that comes to mind first and is the most important is that ability to communicate a thought, an idea. We will have many options come to us and many that are probably really cool concepts and ideas that we might want. But there's also very many times where we will, and we do this as a group, as a committee, when we do this, our speaker selection process, we'll bring things in, but we do have a group because we want to get different perspectives and to determine what our audience is really looking for and needing. But there will be times that we will sit around and we're like, we have no idea what this person is actually trying to talk about from what they submitted, you know? And so that's like a pretty clear sign that probably it's a probably a very cool business, a very cool idea, like you said, but we're probably not going to be able to get that across to our audience and attendees because we don't, you know, just even in just giving us a short little snippet, we don't have any idea what is the ultimate goal or purpose of what is trying to be communicated. So I think that is something that I didn't realize maybe until I started this process, how hard that can be. For many of us, you probably think you're being clear, but it really isn't. So that's something we look at a lot. And then I also think, you know, what is maybe that unique perspective that, and everybody's is unique because it's their own path and journey, but what might be something that we think could resonate to others that maybe is a perspective we haven't heard as much, or an angle that we maybe haven't had as much information about that we could bring to our audience that is something new. So that, you know, that's something that stands out to us more when we're looking, just to be able to have a variety of types of talks, a variety of even just ways that people communicate, and, you know, hearing what they think as far as their way to approach, because also everybody takes in information differently. So being able to also have speakers come who share and educate in different ways, I think is also important and something that we really try to look at during the process.
Yeah. And I think sometimes what I see is kind of a chicken and egg situation where you have a speaker who maybe can speak about many different topics, but it's going to depend on the audience and how they mm-hmm. curate that. And so there's this aspect of, well, I need to know who the audience is to be able to frame what I'm going to speak about, but also you need to know what you're going to speak about to be able to get in front of the audience. And so when you're going through this selection process, what does that look like? Do you kind of know what your audience is and then you seek out the speakers and entrepreneurs? Do they have to seek you out? What's involved in that process?
We do a little bit of both. So we have a for Entrefest, which is what I would be referring to in this case, we have a pretty good idea of what our audience is encompassing. Now, that also is very wide, which I would say is the great thing about the event and also the challenging thing about the event from a programmatic standpoint, because you're going to have somebody who maybe just has the beginnings of an idea, who is looking to become an entrepreneur and starting that journey, to somebody who's potentially sold a couple businesses, to maybe somebody who is within a larger company who's more of that entrepreneur, but wants to be able to take those principles and infuse them elsewhere. And so you have this wide, maybe, level of experience. Plus, you might have a brick and mortar bakery, and then you might have a tech entrepreneur. You know, so it's a wide range. So that can be challenging, but also helps us hone in a little bit too, because we're trying to think of what could speak to some of those different specific areas, but then also, what are topics that could really speak to all, that somebody could get something out of, depending, no matter where they are. And so we will many times be looking for, some specific topics of, we know we want some marketing, we know we want some just, best practices. We kind of call it a toolkit and whatnot. And so we'll have some of those general thoughts in mind, they're kind of keeping an eye out for. But then we'll start really with a call for speakers, because one of the things that we really wanted to do and continue to do is, we don't know what we don't know, and we don't know who we don't know. And we want to always open it up and bring more people in. So that call for speakers has been a great opportunity for us to do that, because it's a way for people to self-select in and send us their information and say, hey, here, I'm here. This is what I would love to do. And we get a lot of ideas from that and start there a lot, because there are people who are interested in being a part of our event, and that means a lot. And then after that, we'll take a look and be like, okay, now that we've looked at this, we really could use somebody from this geographic area, because that's not really covered and that would be interesting. Or we have nothing about finance. Well, we probably should, let's go and work through some different channels and try to find somebody who could speak to that area. So we definitely do a very much a mixture of both, but try to be strategic as we're kind of going through that process.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I feel like from year to year, every conference I've been to, they're all different. There's always really unique speakers and topics, but I also feel like there's usually a lot of overlap of certain topics. So if you were going to pinpoint over the years of doing this, what would you say are like the three biggest solutions or things that just continually year by year entrepreneurs want to hear, need to hear?
I think, that's a good one. That's a good question. Honestly, the marketing related things are always very popular, and that is so forever changing with social media. Now you have AI and ChatGPT, just when you do think about the resources available to you as a business owner, and then the cybersecurity piece kind of connected to it, that is always a hot button issue. What are those new technologies? And how do you use them to your advantage as a business owner? So that's definitely one. And I would say, another one that is always, I think, really important and something that's always something our attendees are looking for is the Founder Fireside. Because I think that goes back to that community piece where we just have an entrepreneur come and talk about their journey and let people ask questions. And it's so simple, but it goes back to that seeing somebody else who is in your similar position, being able to see nuggets of maybe similarities. And I think you can learn a lot from that. You can learn a lot from the failures along the way of others, to be able to take an account and just, there's a mentorship piece there. There's a community piece there. And so that is something that definitely continues. It seems very simple, but it is probably the biggest and most important thing.
Well, I think it's hugely valuable. And that's something I feel like all of us, we feel like this pressure of, okay, if someone is speaking or teaching on something, they have to have it all figured out. They have to be an expert. They have to be perfect. And most of the inspiration and the things that I've picked up in my life have been through reading about other people's mistakes. Mm-hmm. Love reading just memoirs, bios, people's stories. And I know I can think back to my business of feeling like, okay, I need to be an expert. I need to have this totally polished, perfect talk. And the talk that got me across the nation speaking about it was about my life falling apart and me having that, how the hell do I grow a business when my life is falling apart? And it all started from very ashamedly confessing to a very small group of like three women. Mm-hmm. Hey, these are real struggles and I don't know what I'm doing. And here's how I've managed to push through that. And that was what resonated and hit with people all across the country. And I think that that's something to keep in mind is, yeah, that's great to be an expert in your field. That's great. Keep learning, keep going, but you don't have to wait until you have it all figured out to show up and to inspire or encourage someone else.
Oh, I love that, because I think it's that human aspect. We get so busy into the day to day and worrying about all of the things and having all of the things in place. But there's that human piece of it, is that we're all, you know, just working and trying to do the best that we can. And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. But when it doesn't, how are you able to grow from that, right? And so many of the, you know, best things come out of those tough times, and being able to remind each other of that, and that we all go through that, you know, in our on our path to hopefully being successful-ish, right? That I think that it's a super important reminder, and it's a thing that we all can relate to.
Yeah,
because we've all had something.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious for you, if you were to think back through every talk, every speech you've ever heard, is there one that you feel like, wow, that one really changed my course of direction in life?
So the one that comes to mind was a speaker that we had a few. A speaker who we had come a few years ago named Rajesh Anand, and he had this really interesting way of neurodivergent practices and thinking within his business, because many of the people within his company that was fully remote, and this was even before, you know, COVID and a lot of that, maybe had autism or maybe nonverbal, or, you know, maybe had something that they worked in a different way than maybe others did, and they, as we all do. But he had some really interesting ways how he would bring everybody together and to be able to leverage everyone's strengths, and to be able to understand really that communication between people and how others really can maybe take feedback differently than maybe I would. And to be able to understand how best to do that, to be the most successful in having that conversation, or how I can be more intentional and better about sharing with those who I work with how I really work best, or how I process things more, and so that I can be more responsive and receptive to what they're saying, or be more successful. Because that's not something I have ever talked about or shared, or even probably thought much about, really. But it made me take the time to stop for a moment to really think about how I think through things and do and work and process best. But then to also, as new folks join our organization, or as we're sitting together, just really think about how they are as people, you know, and how we can better understand each other better in that way. And I just, it was really, really interesting and really, really made me stop. And it's one of those things that I constantly find myself going back to, like, oh, he said that, we should try that.
Yeah. I think it's one of the coolest things of just how powerful communication is, you know? And I think back I've heard a lot of really good talks throughout the years. The one that always stands out to me, I heard when I was in college. I think I was 19, which it was a while ago. We don't know the specifics, but it was a while ago. And I don't remember the speaker's name. I don't remember really anything about what he said or the details of it. No memory of any of it. I just remember that he was in love with Beyonce, and the whole presentation was about his crush on Beyonce and how he wanted to get with her. And the whole takeaway was, be remarkable. And it was one of those things where I honestly don't remember how he defined it or what he told me to do to come to that, but I noodled over it forever. And I remember just thinking, I don't know how to be remarkable. I don't know what this means. And he had kind of just shared this idea of be someone worth remarking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of played with me. And at the time, I was just a very shy, conservative little good girl. Like, I didn't speak up. I wanted to be invisible. And I remember going to this, not interview, but just kind of casual tour of this ad agency and just thinking, okay, be remarkable. What the heck? Like, how do I be remarkable? Mm-hmm. What does this mean? And I just really listened and I tried to ask good questions. And I remember one of the people who owned the agency afterwards is like, you know, you're really a remarkable person. Here's my card. Feel free to use me as a loose reference when you're ready to find a job. And that whole interaction just stuck with me now years later. And I think that that is the coolest thing, is that you can say one little thing and you can change someone's life for decades moving forward.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That makes me think too, back in college, a professor I had, she was teaching a course, but she was one of the hostages in the Iranian hostages in like 79-80. So right when I was just being born, but she was doing a class just to very much talk about that and resiliency, but she just, the core of it was also just to let it go. And to be able to move on and not hold things necessarily from the past and to let them weigh you down. And obviously she had some very large things, you know, to talk about as far as, you know, what that meant for her.
Yes.
But that was something that also kind of, to you, your point, has always stuck with me. And it was, you know, she probably didn't even know that, you know, she said that and that I've thought about that for all these years.
Yeah, that's one of those talks where after you listen to it, you're like, all right, if she can let go of that, I really need to let go of that boy who, you know,
yes,
go out with me in the ninth grade. Like, yep. Let that go.
Exactly. But yeah, it's like, it's that perspective and that, you know, you can let things that were for a while ago really impact that future. And, you know, when you think about like the entrepreneurship stuff we've been talking about too, like that, and those failures, you know, you can let that really weigh you down or you can let it go. And yeah, that's been another one that has definitely resonated.
Yeah. Awesome. So for the person who is maybe kind of getting the itch, or maybe they've thought about being an entrepreneur, they have this idea, they're thinking about hitting a stage, starting a business, whatever that looks like, what is the one place that you would advise them to start?
So I'm sure it's probably gonna be a little bit different in every community, but you know, if I were to think just Cedar Rapids, I would think come to 1 Million Cups. It's our weekly event. It's on a Wednesday morning, but it's getting you with a community. And there is an opportunity to speak where you could, you know, practice a little bit in front of a small, loving audience, or where you could have somebody and you could show and pitch your idea and get feedback and support. But wherever that may be within your particular city or town, is finding that initial community. And so maybe there's a weekly coffee happening somewhere, or there's, you know, some other event that maybe your small business, you know, group is hosting. But I think that initial entry point, finding that entry point, which we say 1 million cups a lot, because it's just a great opportunity to get by people who really are excited and want to support you and can also just help guide you down that path a little bit. Because I do think it can get so overwhelming so quick. There's many opportunities and resources out there, but being able to help find what is most suited to best help you can be really hard. And so being able to find that community support very early on to help boost that knowledge and just confidence, you know, yeah, to get started. And so that's what that for our particular community, and I know many around, I think is a great starting point for that.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that's one of the hardest things, especially when you're starting off, is you know that you need visibility, but you don't feel worthy of being visible. And I think that what's really eye-opening is once you actually get over the fear, get over your ego, get over yourself, and just show up, you find that you're not the only person. Like, everybody, like, people are so busy thinking about their own stuff and insecurities.
Yes.
Nobody is like pointing like, oh, that person doesn't look like they have it all dialed in. I think that people tend to see us as more successful than we see ourselves a lot of the time. And so I think you're right, being in that community with people who can sort of reframe the way that we see ourselves. And sometimes, as scary as it is to be the least qualified person in the room, that is the best place to become more successful.
Yep. And it's, and again, it's so hard to take that first step sometimes, but being able to find that, that smaller safe space to even just take, you know, half a step, right? But it's still, it's moving forward to making that next full step that much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise. Always a pleasure talking to you. And for anyone listening, would love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions. Shoot us an email at embracetheish@gmail.com or hang out with us online at successfulish.com or Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn at embracetheish.
Success and failure, none of opposite ends. Curveball hits, gotta know where to bend. The attitude will affect destination. And if you determine when you're gonna make it. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Live between successes makes life rich. Living every moment, successful-ish. Hey, successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back. Reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve. Hey. All this weight on my arms, need both legs. In this race, far behind, need most steps. Had to swear the learning curve, hope I don't crash. Hit your nerves when reserves got low cash. When I fail, realize that it won't last. You made it through in the past, just look back. Successful-ish, you can see how the contrast failures and wins. Use the past and then bounce back. You can never win if you never go and do it. Failure is a hard road, rarely ever cruising. Embracing all my wins with a handful of losing. Expect the drought season when the plan's going fluent. I can never really fail, it's all how you view it. It's all a lesson, just depends how you use it. Gather all the data and keep it all exclusive. Never ending journey and the growth is therapeutic. My identity is not in what you see, I am the better me. Mistakes others make, I see. Have been teaching me. Compare yourself to others is an insult to tragedy. We were made unique, gotta use again collectively. Broke down my goals and a few look toesome. Can't take them back cause you already spoke them. Easily regressive, you don't stay focused. Focus, live between success and emotion. Successfully. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. I'm successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve. I'm successful-ish. Another day, another task. Think fast with a whole nother mission complete. Successful-ish. Pick up the weight, press on, and act on the visions I see. I'm successful-ish. Sit back and bask in the glory of all the goals I achieve. Successful-ish. Lose a stack, get it back, reinvest, hope, wait, then I roll up my sleeve.